Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Michael K is on the radio today, and he ain't afraid to say what he's thinking.
It's the Michael K Show.
Michael K is on the radio today. Turn it up, it's time to get on with the show. On 98.7 ESPN Radio.
This is Robin Roberts, and the Michael K. Show starts right now. Take it away, Michael, Don, and Peter.
Thank you, Robin, and a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on a very busy Monday, December 5th, 2022. So when you're getting prepared for the show earlier in the morning, you're figuring you can open with either the Jets or the Giants, and we'll debate about that, and we will talk at length about that. But there is some New York news right away, just breaking right now. The Yankees and Brian Cashman have agreed to a four-year contract. So that just was announced at the winter meetings in San Diego. So Brian Cashman, the GM, for at least the next 4 years for the New York Yankees. That's number one. Number two, and probably really number 1A, is the Mets lost Jacob DeGrom over the weekend. The Rangers signed him to an outrageous five-year, $185 million contract. And then the Mets countered today, guys, by signing Justin Verlander, 40 years old, reigning American League Cy Young Award winner, to a two-year, $86 million deal with a vesting third-year option. So that's $43 million. So now the Mets have a geriatric but potentially great top of the rotation with Scherzer and Verlander. And I'll tell you right off the start, the Mets made out better this way than they would have if they gave DeGrom that kind of length of contract, because it doesn't make sense to me. The Rangers are desperate. They've got two teams in front of them in the division that are much better than them. They spent $500 million on two players last year. They need pitching. They need it desperately. So they grossly overpaid for a guy that for 2 years has not been able to stay on the mound. And I thought about this, guys. I'll throw this out right now. Over under. Now, be honest with yourself. Do the Rangers get 60 starts out of Jacob DeGrom for 5 years? 60. That's 12 starts a year. Do you think they get over 60 or under 60?
I think it's under. I think, come on, you have to bet under. I mean, the information's right there for you. You do the homework tells you it's going to be under. And you're reading my mind, Michael, because when I looked at this, I said to myself, who's got a better chance of starting 60 games over the next 2 years, Verlander or DeGrom? And it's Verlander. I know he's older. I know he didn't pitch in 2021, but he came off a Cy Young Award winning year in 2022, Michael, and I would bet he'd make 60 starts faster than I believe that DeGrom would make 60. So you ask yourself, can I win 40-plus of those 60? Yeah, I believe I can, but I don't think I can get to 60 with DeGrom. I love him. We're going to get into depth later on, I'm sure, just about the emotional tug of war that I went through since Friday, because I don't think there's really anybody to blame here. I just think it's circumstances, and it stinks. Another forever Met walks out the door and is going to finish his career someplace else. But right now, I would bet Verlander would get 60 starts over the next 2 years before I would even think about betting DeGrom making 60 starts in that same span.
Well, what I was struck with, guys, is that it's an obscene amount of money. And Don, you and I have been in lockstep on not understanding how pitchers make this much money relative to everyday players. But particularly in this case, guys, I guess I'm confused as a Mets fan. So last year, the Mets rotation at the top was Scherzer and DeGrom. They were bounced in the first round. Next year, it's going to be Scherzer and Verlander. Did anything really change? Or they just want to keep status quo from where they were in that regard?
Well, I think Verlander is a more consistent, steady horse than DeGrom is. Now, DeGrom did pitch in the postseason. I get it. But he didn't really help them that much. He had 5 wins of the 101 that they won. 5. Justin Verlander will win way more than 5 games. He might win 15 games for the team. Hmm. But you're right, Peter. What you know, the payoff is, how do they pitch in the postseason?
And what else do they do?
Scherzer in the year before wore out in the postseason, and this year he was terrible in the postseason. Listen, I'll tell everybody, and I have a whole harangue ready for it. I don't know whether to do it now or later. Mother Nature, Father Time, they don't lose. So you're betting on these guys defying the age of their birth certificate. I mean, Scherzer's an older guy. Verlander's 40 years old. At some point, that shows up, unless there are performance-enhancing drugs. Baseball's lost its collective mind. You gave $185 million and 5 guaranteed years and a no-trade clause to a guy who is great when he's on the mound, but simply cannot stay on the field. 12 starts a year you could bet on him the last couple of years. He can't stay on the field. Now, when he's on the field, he's one of the greatest ever. I'm not saying that. Now, the Mets go out, and they give a 40-year-old $43 million a year, $86 million guaranteed. Baseball deserves everything that happens to them. Everything. It's like they forget. They forget. Yeah. You're not supposed to give that kind of money to older pitchers, but they continue to do it. You're defying the odds to an unbelievable extent. Yeah. What are you doing?
But you got to get pitching, and this is the going rate. I don't get it. Peter doesn't get it. You don't get it. The world doesn't seem to get it. But this seems to be the going rate for a pitcher.
But, Don, if you say Carlos Rodon, who's going to be 30 next year, that they're saying that he's going to get about $30 million a year. Isn't he worth more than Verlander and DeGrom and Scherzer at 30? But he's going to get 30. None of it makes sense.
No,
it's all bizarro world.
It makes no sense. But living in the absolute now, I think the Mets are better off in the next 2 seasons with Scherzer and Verlander than with DeGrom and Scherzer. Because I just think you'll get more starts out of Verlander. And they're probably banking on the fact he's not 40 yet, but he'll be 40 when the season starts. That the one start he made in 20 and the 0 starts in 21 will mean that he's in a little bit younger as far as the arm may be concerned. And he was great last year coming off of Cy Young. And clearly the Mets are a win-now team. But could you invest in giving 5 years to DeGrom and maybe eating 3 more years past when Verlander would be done? So I don't like it. It doesn't make any sense to me. Peter, we're squabbling over whether we're going to give $37, $38 million to the guy who hit 62 home runs last year and played 145 games, and we're throwing money that we're lucky. If everything goes great and Verlander becomes Sandy Koufax from the 60s, what are you going to get, 34 starts? And no matter how great he pitches, there's no guarantee you're winning any of those 34 games because he's going to be gone after the 6th.
And by the way, ask DeGrom about winning those games with great performances.
See, that's the other thing. It's all about wins and I got to tell you something. Again, I'm torn about this. I've got a top 5 later about this.
Oh, wow.
All right? The fact remains is, as great as DeGrom was, my greatest memory of DeGrom? It has nothing to do with the start last year. It has nothing to do with the Cy Youngs. It's 2015 when he pitched well and helped the Mets get to the World Series. That's what I'm about. I'm about seeing this team win. I don't care who wins Cy Youngs. He can go out there and win 30 games. What's getting me a championship?
I love
DeGrom, but Peter made a great game. You know how many great, spectacular, oh my God, make-out session games you got from DeGrom, and he lose 1-0 or 2-1, and the one RBI that they did get was an RBI single from DeGrom.
Now, I might be off numbers-wise, Don and Peter, but I think DeGrom pitched for the Mets 10 or 11 years, probably 10, right? And he has 82 wins. Now, I know pitchers aren't judged in wins and losses, but 82 wins in 10 years. Justin Verlander, what was he, 17-5 last year? There's an art to winning games that are close. Listen, and one other thing, Met fans don't want to hear. This guy didn't want to be here.
Right. Well, that's it.
Didn't want to be here. Didn't like New York. Wasn't a great leader in the clubhouse. I've talked to people. I covered the team. He's not that guy. Not that he's a bad guy. He's a good guy. Not that guy. He doesn't like dealing with the New York media, the New York pressure, none of that. Didn't have a relationship with Steve Cohen. Never gave the Mets an opportunity to even match the five-year deal. He don't want to be here.
No, when he said he would opt out if he didn't throw a pitch this year, told me he was going to opt out. He wanted out.
Right.
All right, so he wanted out. There's no way the Mets could have given him the money that Texas and the years that Texas gave him. So it stinks that he's gone, but nobody is really at fault here. But the one thing you're being unfair about, Michael, is there is an art to winning games. If you watch DeGrom, he was not losing games because of him. This guy was pitching his heart and soul out, and for whatever reason, they could not get a hit for him. So this is not a guy that, you know, melted down late in games. This wasn't a guy that just didn't have the cubes, as you like to say, to win a game. I agree with you. There's an art to winning games. It's unfair to say that DeGrom didn't know the art. He wasn't given much of a chance in a lot of those games. Believe me, I watched
you,
a
Don.
Lot of them. Well, 1-0 games, my God. How many of them?
Well, you know, how many 1-0, 2-1 games did Tom Seaver win?
Well, but Tom Seaver had the ability to maybe pitch into the ninth, maybe even to the tenth to hang around. We live in a world now, Michael, where you're done after 7.
You're right. And this guy's usually done after 6. So the Rangers get 12 starts, about 6 innings apiece. That's worth to them $37 million. Listen, it's their money.
One
final thing before we get to the football. I didn't mention, the Phillies have signed Trey Turner to an 11-year, $300 million contract. So, for those that say that you can't have a lot of big money contracts on your team, okay, let's count the Phillies, everybody, shall we?
Yeah.
Harper, Turner, Schwarber, Castellanos. I guess you can. So, you make up rules as you go along. And one other thing. I love the fact that every 5 years, baseball grinds to a halt as these two sides battle with each other about collective bargaining. Players are out of their mind. They're out of their mind. Once you unleash the owners, they can't control themselves. They're like animals. They can't control themselves. And you lose time, and you lose time to sign free agency and stuff like that because you don't agree to a contract because of a lockout. No, whatever contract they sign for themselves, the first thing they do is try to circumvent it and outspend it. How come I could see that over 40 years around baseball? Every single time, there's a basic agreement that looks like it favors the owners. You know why it favors the players? Because the owners can't control themselves. They cannot control themselves.
Yeah, just there's so much money to pitchers, so much. But it just stinks, Michael. This is the essence of the Ed Crane Pool rant. This is the essence
of it.
That every time the Mets get a shiny new toy that's theirs, that guy ends up going someplace else. I mean, I'll give you a laundry list of guys, but this one hurts, Michael. This is he's right there with Seaver, and he's going to finish in Texas. And everything that happened with Seaver, it's crazy, and it's not anybody's fault. Usually, I want to get mad at somebody. I can't get mad at the Mets, Michael. I can't.
No.
So do I get mad at DeGrom? All right, maybe I can get mad at DeGrom for why he didn't want to be here. But am I going to get mad at DeGrom that he went and got 5 years at $185 million when the Mets didn't look like they were going to go over 3 years? How do I get mad at DeGrom for that?
I think you have a reason to be mad about DeGrom if you're a Mets fan, just because it seemed like he did not want to stay.
But at the end of the day, he ended up getting a contract much more richer than if he did want to stay with the Mets.
I get it.
Unless the Mets just didn't bother going to that stratosphere because they knew he didn't want to come back.
Mets were offering about $40 million a year for 3 years. He wanted 5 years.
Right. So even if he wanted to stay here, he probably ends up leaving to go to Texas anyway, unless the Mets knew he didn't want to resign. But for the fact that is that even good business, Michael, for the agent not to call the Mets and say, here's the offer from Texas, are you willing to go higher? Tells me he didn't want to be here. Now, I don't know why he doesn't want to be here, but either way, you'd be mad at him. You can't be really mad at the Mets. I could be mad at the Mets for trading Seaver and Kingman, you know, but can I really get mad at the Mets for DeGrom leaving?
Now, B. Water, my friends, writes, Michael, your DeGrom take falls flat. If he didn't want to be in New York, why sign 3-year extension with a player option 3 years ago? Because he wasn't a free agent.
That's it. What is he going to do?
He took the money and ran and then complained and bitched about it the whole time that he didn't sign a good contract.
And it does sound,
Michael, he was miserable.
Like, And
so this, it doesn't fall flat. It's pitch perfect.
No, he does not want to be here. All of the evidence is he doesn't want to be here. Now, to support your side of that argument, Michael, against the B Water guy, is that was during the Wilpons that he signed that extension. He might have something against Cohen.
All I know is that when Cohen and his wife bought the team, Francisco Lindor became very close with them. Very close. We became friends with them. So did Edwin Diaz. DeGrom wanted no part of it. Didn't want it. Didn't want to kiss the ring. Didn't do any of that stuff. So he had an exit strategy a long time. As Don said, when you say you're opting out, if you don't throw a pitch and you still have 30-some-odd million dollars left on your deal, if you don't throw a pitch, you know what? He didn't pitch that great this year. He won 5 games and still opted out. You know what? He made the right move. I don't get mad at Pete. I wouldn't get mad at Judge if he leaves. I'm not going to get mad at DeGrom because he left. You have to do what's best for you. You earned the right to be a free agent. He became a free agent and went where he wanted to go and went to a state without state tax.
Yeah, the exact same deal in New York would have been a lot less than what he signed with in Texas because that money's worth more when you're not paying any taxes. But I don't know what his issue is with the Mets, but the Mets weren't going to match that offer. Good for him. He went to the highest bidder. I think Texas is crazy, but we'll see. I don't want to get into that whole irrelevant thing either. Who knows? It wasn't that long ago Texas went to back-to-back World Series. We'll see. But I can't really get mad at him. I can't get mad at the Mets, but I can get mad at the situation, Michael. Why does this always seem to happen? Right? Pettit left, but he came back. Jeter stayed the whole time. You know, Mo stayed the whole time. God, we get these forever play. And the pitchers, too, Michael. None of Generation K worked out, at least not here. All those pitchers, Wheeler, Harvey, now DeGrom, Syndergaard. What? Poof, gone. Another team. It's amazing. We can't hold on to anything.
It's unbelievable. And now we wait and see what happens with Aaron Judge. And
tomorrow,
our colleague Jeff Passan is reporting that a decision will be made by Judge on Wednesday.
I was predicting Tuesday. I wanted to be right about Tuesday. You know what, Peter? I'll take Wednesday.
Wednesday's a good day for us.
Because I got to tell you, for a talk show perspective, the worst thing about the DeGrom thing was that it happened on Friday night.
And the second worst thing is Verlander happened right before we're going to start talking about football.
But it's a passionate conversation.
Yeah.
I just want to have a passionate conversation, get my opinions out. And I was really rude to people, and I apologize.
When?
Like, I'm like, everybody wants to know. Don, what do you think? I didn't want to give my take on social media and to people at the Garden. I wanted to give my take on the air. Is that so wrong?
Oh, wait, so you even were hitting people who ran into you with Listen on Monday.
Well, I didn't say that. I just...
I like it, Don.
You know, and no offense to these people. These are good people.
Quality people. Family. You call them family.
Yeah. No, these are good people. But I didn't want to go nuts until I got on the air. But the frustrating thing is, usually you get nuts at someone. I'm getting nuts at a situation. I don't think this is anybody's fault. But it still bothers me. God, nothing. Can't keep anything. And the one guy. Well, the two guys, if you count Ed Cranepool, but I'm sorry. Ed, love you. You're not in the stratosphere.
Whoa.
The one guy that stayed, look what happened to David Wright.
And the guy, Peter, that they called the franchise didn't even finish here.
Mm-hmm.
The franchise.
Twice, I know. Even a second time.
Even the time they tried to bring him back.
That got messed up.
Losing him again. But in Reyes, it's just there's a laundry list of people. But it's just David Wright's the guy, and we had to see him physically fall apart to be able to see him end his career with the Mets, right? It still ended sad. The one guy that got the finish here, it still ended sad.
And one other thing. I mean, I'm following Yankee fans on Twitter, and I can't believe the Yankees are. Why can't you wait and judge them on what they do rather than do it? Keep taking the temperature every single hour. Who cares if the Rangers did something? Who cares if the Mets did something? If they go to Tampa on February 12th or 13th, whenever they report for spring training, and they haven't done anything, you know what? Then you have every right to be upset. Until then, Relax.
Oh, Yankee fans.
Don't even bother.
Seriously, Yankee fans, shut up. All right? Shut your mouth. Because you're going to end up keeping Judge just like Mo, Bernie Williams ended up staying. Stop. You lose nothing, okay? You want to feel bad? You want to get aggravated? Root for a baseball team that can't hold on to anybody. They all leave. All of them leave. Imagine being a Yankee fan and Mo finished up his career in Seattle. Or if Derek Jeter ended up his career in Pittsburgh. Or Pettit left again to go to Houston. No. You keep players. And oh, by the way, the great ones, if they aren't with you, they eventually will join you. All right? So don't worry about it, okay? Because you're sitting there worried about it. You're going to end up keeping Judge, and you're going to go and march to a championship again. Every shiny new toy we get, it gets taken away. So you know what the Mets are? They're like a library. I get to read the book, but I got to bring it back.
Ooh, I like that.
Wow.
All right? You get to keep them. You get to put them on your mantle. You get to put Mo next to Jeter. Next
put
to
them on
Pettit,
your mantle.
Next
Good job.
To, next to
no, Pettit left.
Mantle.
Pettit left. For 3 years to go to Houston.
You get to keep your stuff. I get the little baseball library card, and I get to play with it for a little while, and then I got to bring it back and hand it back to you. Seaver. Harvey. Syndergaard. DeGrom.
Wheeler.
Strawberry. Reyes.
Gooden.
Knight. Gooden. Should I go on?
Keith Hernandez, although he didn't start.
Keith Hernandez
there, he
was in
Cleveland.
Sitting there batting 200 in Cleveland. Had to see Gary Carter wearing his San Francisco Giant jersey.
Even
Gotta
Jeff
bring
Kent.
It back.
Even Jeff Kent.
Have to see him become a god in Toronto. All of them. Even Coney.
Yep.
Coney, one of the great Met pitchers. I got to see him in a Yankee jacket and the bleachers. Watching a Yankee Red Sox game. He's been sitting there killing it on Yes.
And winning four championships across the town.
So, Yankee fans, zip it.
Zip it good.
And they're sick to their stomachs because Cashman, the big, grand, poobah, disgusting, I can't even say the words that they're probably thinking right now, just re-signed for 4 years. You guys want to have him killed, but meanwhile, he'll put a 100-win team on the field for you and go to the playoffs.
Yeah, Anthony in the Bronx.
Not today, brother!
Hello, Ant.
Yeah, you know, Don, you just, you know, as a Mets fan, you just remind me of every other guy on the wrong side of 50 that it's all negative. It's we don't keep the shiny toy and the other guys go elsewhere. Why don't you accentuate the positive for the, I don't know how many listeners you have, millions probably, that listen to you guys. And why don't you say today we just signed the reigning AL Cy Young Award winner, World Series winner, Justin Verlander, who's going to go 1-2 with Max Scherzer, and they're going to be our 1-2 guys.
I said they're better off now than they were if they brought DeGrom back for 2 years. We already talked about that. I've now moved on to the fact it still stinks that DeGrom left. You could still be upset DeGrom's gone.
Why? He's been here for 8 years. He won a couple Cy Young Awards. Those are individual awards. What did he do for us as a team that brought us to the next level? You want me to answer that question? Nothing. He did nothing for us.
I don't know if it was all his fault.
Level.
I don't know if it was all his fault that he got hurt. He got hurt, and that's why they didn't re-sign him. I'm glad they didn't re-sign him. It's just the idea that we went from this unbelievable great pitcher, and now he's gone. But I was getting on Yankee fans, which I would think a Met fan would appreciate, that they're complaining today. And they'll still figure it out. So stop. Don't get on the. I'm positive. I think there are better team, Michael, in 2023 with Verlander than DeGrom, because I have more confidence that he's going to make his allotted starts than DeGrom would. So that's positive.
He'll make 30 starts.
God, I don't,
because he's already had his Tommy John surgery.
And I do think that that one start in 2 years between 20 and 21 might squeeze out a couple of more years than had he pitched, you know, 60 times in 20 and 21 combined.
Brian Hoke of MLB.com saying, reporting that Aaron Judge expected to arrive at the winter meetings in San Diego tomorrow.
So Wednesday. I like Wednesday.
No, well, Tuesday he's coming.
Rob, I mean Wednesday, yeah. The report was that they'll know something. So he's going to get there in San Diego, and they'll probably have a press conference on Wednesday that he's coming back.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
The Giants tie the Commanders. The Jets lose to the Vikings. Both had opportunities to certainly win. We'll start, obviously, with the Jets. They had their chances, for sure. They fell behind early. Their defense didn't play well in the first half. They were down 20-3. They never quit. They had the ball on the 1 yard line, third down and goal, and they didn't run the ball, which I don't understand. They didn't run the ball. 27-22. They lose to the Vikings, putting more pressure on them to beat the Bills this coming week. They get helped out by the fact that the Dolphins go to San Francisco and lose a game to a team that lost its quarterback for the rest of the year and still were able to run away. So that's a positive. The Patriots lost, so that's a positive. Jets are still in the same place, but they could have put some distance between themselves and the rest of the division. Didn't happen. But if they can beat the Bills, all things are good. I thought Mike White played okay yesterday. I know he had over 300 yards. Jets shouldn't be running the ball that much. Jets defense played better in the second half. White is certainly resilient and tough and doesn't give up. And in my opinion, Braxton Berrios should have had that ball. But all things considered, the Jets played well enough to win, guys. They just didn't win. And that's the maturation of a team as well. Yep. You have to learn how to win games.
I still think this Minnesota team is fugazi, and they're not 10-2. But they played almost a perfect game in the sense that they didn't turn the ball over, because if they made one mistake, they would have lost. And right. The Jets, you just can't kick five field goals and expect to win against a playoff team on the road. Just can't do it. And missed opportunities, and that's when I want to ask Robert Saleh, do you look at this game as, hey, we hung with one of the best teams in football record-wise on the road and almost won, or do you look at it as a missed opportunity? And I think with all those trips to the red zone, you got to look at it as a missed opportunity. I don't think Minnesota played particularly well. I don't think Kirk Cousins was all that great. Well, you held Jefferson to, what, 46, 47 yards of receiving?
One big TD, though.
That was a big boy TD, for sure.
Yep.
But you kept coming back, and you just couldn't find the end zone. One more trip to the end zone out of all those times in the red zone, and they win the game. So it's tough. But one thing I wanted to say, Michael, and I don't know if you got the same impression. We had this opinion last week, but it's been accentuated over the weekend. you know, with the Mike White t-shirts and all the players doubling down on how great and hard working Mike White is. All right, we get it. You hate Zach Wilson. We get it. For the Jets' social media to send out the pictures of the Mike White t-shirt. I mean, how do you think Zach Wilson feels about that?
I think that it probably shows that they really don't care.
That shows that he is absolutely done. He will never play another game for the Jets again. But that said, they made the right decision. White gives him a better chance to win. I thought he was fine yesterday. You see, he can execute the offense, which is something Zach Wilson couldn't do. I don't know where you can go with Mike White, but they've got a much better chance to execute and win the last games on their schedule than they could with any other quarterback that's wearing a Jet uniform right now.
And listen, he was part of the shortcomings offensively for this football team yesterday.
Yep.
But Don, he's also part of the reason they were in the game late, too.
Yeah.
He does, to your point, I mean, that first interception was absolutely behind and was his fault. But he actually is pretty... He gives you a chance to be in games. And I end up leaving this game feeling better about Mike White than before, not worse. You were very... Michael was very hard on him yesterday in our group text all day long.
No, yes, I was very, you know what? First of all, I was being a little bit that guy.
Yeah, of course you were.
But, I mean, everybody, ooey gooey. I mean, I almost agree with Don. The players, in their over-gushing sentiment about how much they love Mike White. To me, that means they're saying they hate Zach Wilson.
That's the way I took it.
What does Zach Wilson do so bad? Maybe behind the scenes he's an awful dude. I have never heard that. But why would they hate him this much?
Well, there's got to be something more to it. It just can't be his play. I just think it's this team. They bent over backwards for Wilson. They did everything for Wilson. They probably look at this season and say, we might have a couple more wins if Wilson's not the quarterback. They're probably mad about that. But for whatever reason, we also don't know.
I mean, they also really may not like him.
But we don't know the reason, but we know that they don't like him. Because, again, I understand rallying around Mike White. I get that's become a football thing to kind of rally around something. They all wore the Mighty Duck jerseys going in. Like, I get what's happening there, and it's cool because I think it's a good story. But I also kind of read between the lines and I say they obviously have no care in the world for what Zach Wilson thinks because they probably know he's done. Like, when the Jets are behind that, I was like, that just tells me they don't care about Zach anymore, and fine. You know, they've completely moved on. But good for Mike White. They throw a lot more with him. Yeah, I would like to see a little bit more of creativity, for lack of a better word, in the red zone. But they've got the right quarterback, and things, as Michael said, broke their way. Patriots lost. Chargers lost. Chargers are such a... God, that team's not going anywhere.
That was a
brutal loss for them.
I'll tell you who might be going back to the Super Bowl, though, Cincinnati. They're coming on.
And how about... Kansas City beats everybody. Can't beat Cincinnati.
Nope. Three straight, right?
Yeah. But you know what? If you're the Jets, let Cincinnati win that division, and now we'll see what's up with Lamar Jackson in Baltimore. They're able to squeak that win out.
Oh, my Lord. What an ugly game that was.
DeSean Jackson just signed with them. But if Lamar is hurt or compromised, then that's a team you want to battle with to see if you can pass because they've got the tiebreaker on you for the wild card. But right now, with the Patriots and the Chargers sitting at six wins, guys, I think the Jets have to feel really good, even if they lose to Buffalo next week, that there's still an avenue for them to get to the playoffs. I wish I could say the same for the Giants.
All right, let's shift over to the Giants. Time for today's Big Blue Report, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Everybody's criticizing Dable on one thing, which I don't criticize him at all. He's got 4th-and-3 in overtime, under 2 minutes remaining. It's kind of midfield, around midfield. I don't know the exact line. And they're saying he should have gone for it. Are you out of your mind? His offense isn't good. Saquon Barkley had 3 yards rushing in the second half on 7 carries. And you're going to go for it on 4th-and-3. And then when you don't get it, and then Washington has to complete a 15-yard pass to get into the game-winning field goal position, you'd be all over Dable. That's a joke. Here's where I criticize Dable. I wonder if Don and Peter agree. You get the ball near the end of the game. It's 20-20. And you throw 2 bombs on 1st down and 2nd down? Why?
Yeah.
All you have to do is matriculate the ball up the field like 30 yards, couple of passes. You have your time. What are you doing? Yeah. What are you doing there with two bombs? Now, one of them should have been caught by Slayton.
Oh, I
give you that. But that they're criticizing Dable for being too conservative, and I think he was way, way too liberal with the ball at the end of the game when he could have won the game with a field goal.
I think it's all about the moment. Listen, the Slayton play worked. You know, so they went right back to it the next play, I guess, because they figured it's something that they had a chance of working again. So I think they kind of got sucked into the circumstances. But at the end of the day, it ended up being no movement, no change of field position. You took 10 seconds off the clock. But that Slayton, he's got to make that catch. I hate getting on him because he's been elevated basically to a number one receiver, and we know he's not that. But he's an NFL receiver, and it's in his hands.
Oh, I was already resigned to losing. In that moment, it was done. You got to make
that catch. They showed a stat on the game. He has the second highest percentage of drop balls in the league.
Yeah,
he's not a number one receiver. He's the best receiver they have.
He's the best they have. You know, and as far as the 58-yard field goal, God, I thought he was going to make it because remember he kicked that 61 whatever in Carolina. How eerie was that?
The win.
You know, it was a 60-plus yard field goal in Carolina to beat Eli and the Giants when Ron Rivera was his coach, and then he had a chance to beat Rivera, which would have been, you know, the longest field goal in Giant history, believe it or not.
I know. That was wild.
And I really thought he was going to nail it. Didn't even really come close. And I still take a tie over a loss, guys. I mean, it still stinks not to win, but you'd much rather tie than lose.
Now,
that might help you down the road.
And Peter would agree. It turns the next game. Now, Washington has a bye this week. The next time they play is the week after this Sunday, and which is a Sunday night football game. They flexed it already.
Yeah.
That's a must-win for both teams.
Sure. Must-win for both teams. Now, you have to assume that the Giants won't beat the Eagles this weekend. Now, if they do, that does sort of change the situation for the Giants.
Yes.
So, obviously, if they somehow beat the Eagles at home this week, different ball game. Another thing, there are a couple of things to keep your eyes on with regard to the Giants' playoff chances. Number one, both my Commies and the Giants caught no break from Geno Smith leading Seattle to another comeback victory. That doesn't help us out at all. Although, on the flip side, even though San Francisco won, they lost Jimmy G, which, I mean, the kid looked pretty good, so maybe they'll be all right anyway. Also, schedule-wise, guys, the Giants close out against the Eagles, right? The Commies close against the Cowboys. So there's going to be a lot. That week 18, Don, a lot of it's going to come down to, has Philly clinched over Minnesota by then or not? A lot is going to come down to that. And is Dallas in play for the division,
right?
Or are they settling and they're good, they're just taking a wild card?
I think there's a better chance of the Eagles resting players than the Cowboys, because I think the Eagles could be in a position where they've clinched the one seed already.
But no, but the Eagles could be dueling with Minnesota. They're only a game apart.
I get that, but I still think when it's all over, that's better odds than the Cowboys have already clinched a spot and can't move. So, but either way.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
The Robert Saleh Report on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by Pepsi, and we welcome in the head coach of the New York Jets, Robert Saleh. Coach, it's Michael, Don, and Peter. How are you today?
I'm good, guys. How you guys doing?
We're doing well. You said yesterday, no moral victories in this league. What do you take out of yesterday's game of a positive nature, Coach?
You know, there's a lot of good things happened in the game. Obviously, we moved the ball on offense. We played really, really well on defense in the second half, and made some things happen on special teams. But at the end of the day, there were 9 total red zone opportunities between their team and our team, and they won 8 of them. And when that happens, you're not going to win. So,
you know, Mike, I have a specific question. When you had a chance to go ahead on the second to last drive, you're at the 1 yard line, and then on third and fourth down, you do not run the ball. What was the thinking behind that?
You know, we'd run it first down, we ran it second down, third down, call it an RPO. There was a run-pass option there, and it didn't work out. And then on fourth down, it's try something different. You know, it's call your best play. What is it at that moment that you feel will get us in the end zone? And, you know, that was the best play that we could think of, and guys executed it almost perfectly. It just didn't work out at the end, you know. And you could always go back, guys. Anytime something doesn't work, you know, we could always second guess it. But you know, just it is what it is.
Let me ask you from a defensive perspective, because you're a defensive guy. Is it easier to defend in the red zone because there's less field to cover?
For sure. You know, even though we weren't very good at it yesterday, they were 3 for 3 in the red zone. It is. You can be a lot tighter. You can be stickier. You can take away windows. It comes down to having the ability to stop the run game, which they did a good job of. Like I said, they stopped us on those 2 runs where we gave up 2 rushing touchdowns. You know, the best rushing teams usually are the best red zone teams. And, you know, so it is a lot easier, but, you know, from an execution standpoint or from a land standpoint, it's not they can't push you vertically anymore, but still got to play and execute.
What do you think went wrong with the defense in the first half, Coach?
You know what? You know, give them credit. You know, we were playing a certain style of ball on third down, and Kirk did such a good job of finding the open guy. And that's why he's been in the league so long. It's why he's made so much money. He's able to process and make quick decisions, and he got the ball into his playmakers' hands. They were ahead of the sticks the entire first half, getting in the 3rd and 4 less. Again, credit to them. They did a really nice job running the ball and running quick game to get to just keep chopping at the yardage. And so they were in very advantageous situations throughout the entire first half. And thought Brick and the staff did such a great job making the adjustments that we needed to make to get a little bit stickier and to create more advantageous situations for us, and then our D-line took it from there.
How much more expansive is this offense, Coach, with White as opposed to Wilson?
I don't know if it's expansive is the word. I mean, it's, you know, like I said, Zach has been making the right decisions, and he's been going where the ball needs to go, or sending the ball where it needs to go. It's there's just some fundamental things that he's got to work on with regards to accuracy and timing and all that, and he's been getting better every week. And Mike is doing a good job running the offense and getting the ball again within the timing and rhythm of the play. He's doing a really good job at that. So it's I don't know if it's as expansive. I think Zach can do it all too. It's just a matter of reconnecting to all his fundamentals. But with that said, Mike is doing a really, really nice job running the offense. Again, getting the ball to his playmakers. He's pushed the ball downfield when he's had to. He's taken the checkdowns when he's had to. And just feel like he's doing a really good job just keeping defenses off balance.
Coach, it's hard not to notice the level of support that Mike is getting from this team. The T-shirts, everything they've had to say about him, etc. At any point, does it concern you how that could affect Zach Wilson to see this level of support for Mike?
No, I mean, it's I feel like our guys support Zach too. I mean, they had that big outing out in Utah where they all hung out. I think it was Utah where they all hung out. Over the summer, they've had all the passing camps together. They've done, they go out to eat all the time. Even in stretch lines, they're all still a band of brothers. I mean, you know, I get the moment now, and whatever the moment is now, the media is going to catch it and blow it up in social media and the echo chamber and all that good stuff. But I don't think that means that Zach doesn't get support from his teammates. I just think it shows how much love they have for Mike. And you can say it for each of their teammates too. But with that said, Mike is a very likable guy, and he's coachable, and guys love him. He's got one of those personalities that guys gravitate to.
All right, you're going to have to give me clarity on this. So I'm watching the game, and you look at the numbers afterward, and, you know, Mike White has over 360 yards passing. But then you look at his quarterback rating, which if you said, okay, you have $1 billion to explain how they do that, I wouldn't be able to do it. But it's like 58, which is not good. It's almost a third of a perfect out. What did he do wrong that didn't give him such a great quarterback rating? I know he had the two interceptions, but could that drop it that much?
Yeah, that's all of it. When you don't throw a touchdown pass and you throw, I think ESPN does their version of the QBR, which is probably a more accurate explanation of whether or not the quarterback played well. Mm-hmm. But thought he did. You know, the offense in general just did such a good job of moving the ball. I think it was five consecutive scoring drives, seven consecutive drives into their territory. And it just, like I said, it just didn't work out. You know, we couldn't get the ball in the end zone. Even on that quarterback sneak that we reviewed, I mean, shoot, it was painstaking to try to cross the goal line. And you got to give them credit, right? I mean, they're the ones defending it. But for Mike, I thought, you know, the first one was a bang-bang play. Ball popped in the air. And then the second interception, he had to go there. Getting pressure off his left side, had to let the ball go, and he had to go to the end zone with the limited time we had remaining, and it was intercepted.
Who do you agree with, Coach? Do you agree with Mike or Braxton? Mike said that pass should have been a tad in front, and Braxton said, no, the pass was perfect. It was my fault. Whose fault was it?
You know, I'm going to sit in here and talk to Mike on whether or not that was the best play call for that moment. And, you know, I think it's very important. There's an old saying that whenever you point one finger at somebody, you got three pointing back right at you. So always look inward. I love that they looked inward and they feel like they both could have done better. It's a precision league. Everyone's got to do their job. And that includes coaches making sure that we're in the perfect play call and always trying to reevaluate, even in success, how can we reevaluate to make things even better? And, you know, so, you know, you just wish that play. I know I've got faith in Braxton. He'd make that catch obviously 9 out of 10 times, and Mike would make that throw 9 out of 10 times. And it's just unfortunate. It just didn't work out for that moment. But I'm never going to fault those guys for the effort and the strain that they put into the entire game.
I think I know the answer because you're such a positive guy, but how should we look at this game? That you danced with one of the best teams in the NFL record-wise on the road, or that an opportunity was missed?
Both. You can say both. I think for such a young team to go into that stadium, it's loud, unbelievable fan base. 9-2 football team, playoff atmosphere. They're playing for a one seed. You know, it was an absolute dogfight. Anyone who watched that game, if you were there live, I mean, it was an absolute dogfight. And so a lot of things to gain in terms of going on the road in that type of environment, back against the wall, got hit first in the first half and come out swinging in the second half. So a lot of really cool things and that we can take from that game and grow from. But at the same time, we missed opportunity. We had 6 shots in the red zone, and we could only get it across once. Like I said, there were 9 red zone opportunities, and they won 8 of them. And so there's just so many things that we can learn from that if we truly want to be a playoff team. I think from the type of locker room we have, the effort, the strain, all that stuff, are we playoff ready? Absolutely. And then when you get to an opportunity, like how do those playoff teams get over the hump? You get over the hump with precision and execution and tight windows, because the better the team that you're facing, the tighter those windows, the better they block, the better they run, the better it just everything's better. And so to experience that on the road and that type of environment, I thought we could take. I just feel like we could take so much growth from that and put it in our bag and continue to keep working.
Now, for our listeners, Coach meets with the print media before he comes on with us on a Monday. And you know, I'm reading some of the stuff that you said, Coach, and you said that you still believe that you're going to play Zach Wilson this year. So I respectfully ask you, if Mike White continues to play this way, where's the window to play Zach Wilson?
Well, you know, it's football is a week-to-week deal. There's no sense in saying anything other than we're going to go week to week. We have a game plan for Zach to try to get him back to fundamentally and all the different things that we feel like he needs to work on to get him back to where there's a reason why he was a second pick. I think it's important for people to understand that. I mean, he's a very, very talented young man. Not that Mike White's not talented, not that Joe Flacco's not talented. They are. They're very, very talented. And I've said it and I've argued it that I know that if you have more than one quarterback, you have none, but I feel like we have three starters. And so our commitment to developing everyone on the roster and giving them a chance to play is there. But at the same time, so week to week, this is Mike White's opportunity. And so we're going to choose to really allow him to attack those opportunities, and we'll see where it goes.
Now, it's only been a couple of weeks, but have you seen any growth with him working with the coaches and on the scout team?
Yeah, he's been doing a good job. You know, offense is all run. I always make fun of an offensive guy because I feel like they've got 31 other offensive coordinators working for them because they all watch each other's tape and then they attack defenses with each other's tape. So everyone runs the same thing. And so he goes in there, he sees the play, we give him the play in our verbiage, and then we're just letting him go play football and feel the timing and rhythm against our defense. Can he get completions? Just get completions, be accurate, get it to the check down, push the ball when you need to, make good decisions. And then all the work that he's getting afterwards with Calabrese and just trying to make sure that he's staying focused on all of and reconnecting to everything. And I feel like he's been doing a really good job with it.
Coach, good luck in Buffalo. We thank you for coming on as always.
Thank you, guys.
All right. That's the Robert Saleh Report brought to you by Pepsi. Jet fans, head over to your local grocer and stock up for Jets game day. Football watching better with Pepsi, available at ShopRite.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.